David Tarajuk, of course, joins us on a Friday morning. His website is themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and hopefully here he is. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Glad to be reporting in. Sorry we were connected and weren't connected and now connected again, but I'm reporting not this week from the media capital of the world, as I so often do, New York City, but instead, once again, from the great state of Maine, where the air is so very clear. And I'm glad to be discussing the week's news with the clear-eyed Marshall Miles.
Now, I want to bring something up to you, seeing as you're normally based in the media capital of the world. I mentioned this earlier this week. I use Starlink, so I get satellite TV. And so I can get news channels from you. I was watching the news out of Channel 2 in New York, and a public service announcement came on, and I thought it was a joke. I thought it was part of the one of the late night shows, and it was a public service announcement about preparing for a nuclear attack. And
out of the archives, perhaps.
No, they actually decided to run this. I thought it was a joke, but no, someone thought it was a good idea to run this. And I mentioned this earlier this week, David. What it reminded me of when I was in grammar school, at least once a week, when I was in grammar school, we had drills in the case of a nuclear attack to get under our desks. And I look back at that now thinking it did give me some comfort when I was in grammar school. But obviously, getting under the desk in the event of a nuclear attack would not have done much. But I just thought it was funny that somebody thought it at this time, with all the world tensions, to run that public service announcement in New York City.
Well, either funny or deeply disturbing.
Yes.
I don't quite know how to react. And it's interesting that a New York station should do that. I'm going to have to put on my reporter shoes and go out and find out.
It wasn't just one
interesting policy decision to take in this political climate, right?
Yeah, it wasn't just one station. It was actually produced by somebody. It was on numerous stations. But now let's step back from that. And before we go to the international news, because I watched Joe Biden this morning at his news conference, and now he's off to Saudi Arabia. The latest news to come out of the January 6th hearing is that now a police officer is confirming the confrontation that Donald Trump did have wanting to go to the Capitol. A police officer in that motorcade recounted to the committee members the exchange between the president and the Secret Service, and he basically confirmed what was reported.
Yes, indeed. We're getting more and more evidence before the committee, and of course journalists are doing their bit to ferret out supportive evidence or contradictory evidence. The journalist's job is to follow the evidence wherever it leads. But yes, confirmation that the contretemps, it might turn out to be historically very significant, a spat between the chief executive, the president of the United States, and the men and women charged to protect him, the Secret Service, and whether or not it was an actual reach for the clavicle of the Secret Service agent who was refusing to take ex-President Trump to the Capitol building. Or not, might finally get settled. The evidence from a single police officer is now extra valuable. And it comes at a time when the Secret Service itself is under microscopic examination afresh, because all efforts to gather communication about that incident in particular, but events overall on the day before January 5th, on January 5th, and then the day itself, the 6th, have been trying, not just the committee, but the Inspector General of Homeland Security, under which the Secret Service falls administratively, trying to establish what kind of communications were going on, and the Inspector General specifically requested texts, phone texts, from the agents that day, and they've all been deleted. How interesting that is. Now, whether they were deleted deletely, the deletion certainly happened after the request was made, but the Secret Service people are letting it be known that this was not deliberate obfuscation or destruction of evidence. It was just part of the process of going through the swap over of old devices for new devices, in which messages get deleted forever. It's a rather hard thing to credit entirely, but that's the state of play. But now we're getting evidence, as you say, from other sources besides the Secret Service themselves. So we might get greater clarification. So let's go to the Middle East, shall we, Marshall?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We speak at one of those times, I think, when politics and governance, on the one hand, are butting directly and very obviously against journalism. The depth of this conflict, because it's always there, remains intractable, however much politicians may proclaim their belief in the freedom of the press. Today, as you say, President Joe Biden moves on from Israel and the Israeli-occupied territories, where Palestinians live unwillingly under Israel's control, to arrive in the capital of Saudi Arabia, a country ruled in effect by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is responsible, we have to remember, for the death and dismemberment of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. It's an infamous case. We must talk about that, and maybe we'll go into that later. But anyway, we will go into that later. But for now, let's just review coverage of the Israel-centered part of this Mideast trip. So far, it's carried all the usual hallmarks in the coverage. We've been getting reports of the usual expressions from both sides of the perennial identity and purpose between the U.S. and Israel. A major concern, of course, is the threat posed by Iran and its capability of becoming a nuclear-armed enemy. One difference on that issue, though, between the two sides talking to each other, is, of course, Biden's desire, still strong, but maybe in danger of running out, to return to that previous nuclear-controlling deal between Iran and the world's most powerful nations, five of them, six of them, until it became a deal out of which the Trump administration unilaterally withdrew. The Biden administration is trying to get back in. Israelis don't approve of that approach. And we may find that America tires of trying to reconstruct that deal, or at least American membership in that deal. What I'd like to point out, though, it's kind of striking that in the coverage this time has been the treatment of the Palestinian issue. I don't want to exaggerate, but it's almost as if it has faded into the background. The usual platitudes have been reported, of course, but nothing of substance has been discussed, not during the talks, and very little, frankly, in the press. I mean, all these things are relative. I mean, it's mentioned, of course, but it's interesting that in relative terms, it has somewhat faded to the background. Eventually, at the very end of his trip, indeed just today, Biden has actually visited Palestinian leaders in Bethlehem, in the southern Israeli-occupied West Bank. But no substantial political advance was offered. Just some American financial aid, namely assistance for their hospital system. What am I talking about? Their healthcare situation is dire, and America is offering large amounts of money to help their hospital system. And also, for the future, looking to the future, there are promises to give American help in developing the 4G phone network for the West Bank and Gaza as well. But one especially current and bitter issue for the Palestinians got nowhere, absolutely nowhere. It's the matter of yet another journalist killed, yet another outrage being addressed very unsatisfactorily. I'm talking about the Palestinian-American reporter Shireen Abu Akleh, who was on assignment as usual with her work for the Al Jazeera network, and she was shot dead while covering a raid by Israeli forces into the West Bank. The Palestinians have claimed that an Israeli shooter killed her, deliberately targeting her. United States authorities, after the bullet that killed her was handed into the U.S. Embassy, concluded that while the bullet was badly damaged, forensically, it was possible to say that Israel gunfire was, I'll quote the report, it's likely responsible for the death of the journalist. They couldn't say, maybe it would be impossible to say, whether or not it was a deliberate targeting of this journalist. But the Israelis have kept on maintaining that it wasn't clear which side might have killed her. The whole story is, as I say, wholly unsatisfactory. We're talking about killing journalists here, and you'll forgive me if I get emphatic about this point. Let's consider that the full extent of that Khashoggi case that we opened with. More than a year ago, the broad United States intelligence community, under the director of national intelligence, they jointly announced, and I'm going to quote directly again, "We assess that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved an operation in Istanbul, Turkey, to capture or kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi." Nothing more definite than that. It's pretty damn definite, right? But it turns out that in the industrialized world's freshly demonstrated global dependence on oil, and I have to say America's desire in particular for low pump prices for gasoline, all of this has prompted a very morally queasy change of mind in Joe Biden. We can all remember, I'm sure, the candidate for president who labeled the Saudis and said that he would make sure that they were a pariah nation because of the killing of Khashoggi. But he's now, as president, cozying up to the gruesome murderer. He's hoping, of course, when he talks to the Crown Prince, oh boy, I'm getting a little intemperate here, but the hope is, of course, to try and get the Saudis to produce more oil so that the world prices will go down. It looks like they're going down anyway, but anyway, the effort to get more oil into the market so the prices might stay down. What an ethical price to pay for getting cheaper gas for gas guzzlers. The acceptance we're being asked to accept silence about a journalist killed by abducting him, murdering him, and cutting him into pieces with a bone saw. But it's 4 years after that happened, and time apparently changes political considerations. Here's how the mood has shifted in those nearly 4 years. Since Khashoggi was butchered. I want to quote to you, with some disgust, I have to say, a conclusion that was just drawn by the academic, you may not have heard of him, but I read him occasionally, F. Gregory Gause III, writing in Foreign Affairs, the journal of the prestigious American Council for Foreign Relations. Here's a quote. "Biden's move to bury the hatchet with the Saudi crown prince is necessary." A very unfortunate phrase that, you probably agree. Bury the hatchet, in this case. Anyway, Professor Gauss goes on to say it's necessary and understandable reaction to the world as it is. The voice of political realism there, you'll recognize, realistic. Not just the broken politics of the Middle East, but also the global disruptions caused by the Russian war in Ukraine. I don't know, Marshall, but I don't think you have to be a journalist, as I am, feeling solidarity with other journalists, to be thoroughly appalled by that position.
No, but this is where the United States puts itself into these positions. We don't have to be in this position. We are the largest producer of oil in the world. The United States, not Saudi Arabia, we are. And we have failed to get our consumption of oil and fossil fuels under control. We would have started working on this 20 years ago. We wouldn't even be in a position where our government has to make the illegitimate decision to make good with somebody who allows and sends people out to chop up a journalist. We wouldn't have to put up with the fact that other countries that we might want to try to be friends with, Israel, where we're very close to, where Israel, we can recognize that Israel made a horrible mistake and killed a reporter. We put ourselves in this position time and time again as a country and as a government simply because we just don't seem to have a long-range plan. And over the past 5 years, a dedicated program to discredit the press by a very popular person, Donald Trump, who reaches and swears the tune to about 40% of our population, has managed to succeed in making the press evil. It's you know, if you go back and you were to think,
enemy of the people was the Trumpian phrase that was used.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, everyone in power now has got to work in the context of the world turned very unstable and unconfident about its previous verities by those 4 years of Trump in power. But we can't constantly blame Trump for doing that.
No.
Biden's now in charge, and he's made some decisions that are based on these questionable notions. We have to deal with monsters in order to, I think the broad definition, it goes beyond just the question of oil, but stability in general is the shibboleth that politicians are turning to now. You probably remember, just before this trip, Biden himself said in a Washington Post op-ed, I know that there are many who disagree with my decision to travel to Saudi Arabia. You bet. And I'm one of those many. And he tried to persuade us by writing that I'll turn to the op-ed itself here, writing that the Saudis are a country that can help with what he called greater stability in the Middle East region and in the world in general, he was suggesting. And he said, my aim will be to strengthen a strategic partnership going forward. Yeah, a strategic partnership with Saudi Arabia, with that crown prince, that murderous crown prince, that is based on mutual interests and responsibilities, while also holding true to fundamental American values. That's classic political doublespeak, isn't it? I mean, shaking hands or even just fist bumping, like Biden did with the Israelis, with the cold-blooded murderer of a journalist, doesn't strike this American journalist as being true to American values.
You know, you're so right. You know, journalists have an untenable situation when it comes to war. And yes, journalists have been killed in wars. That's why when journalists go to war zones nowadays, they're paid. I had a friend that was a photojournalist and that worked for ABC. He was offered tremendous amounts of money to work 3 months at a time in war zones. When he was younger, he did it. When he got older, he didn't do it. And journalists are killed accidentally all the time in war zones. But they're targeted now. They're targeted. If you know, and it's amazing that it's allowed to happen. It's, you know, how could it be just one Al Jazeera reporter, who is a known reporter, is the one that gets shot by an Israeli bullet? And that's the thing that
Indeed, it's highly suspicious at the very least, right? Yeah. And it may be impossible to determine the actual truth, but I think your general point is right. The journalists are becoming more and more expendable, and the Committee to Protect Journalists Worldwide is certainly very concerned about this, and the numbers are going up, and a lot of it is just, as you say, collateral killing. It's just accidental killing because, you know, when we go to war, we put ourselves at risk. That's obvious. But as you say, there is a disturbing tendency, and the evidence is clear for this, as laid out by the committee and other journalist organizations, which tabulate the deaths of journalists carefully, and the as much information as they can gather about each killing. That so many of the deaths are now targeted deaths. Specifically aiming at journalists, not just in actual battle, but you know, in the background murky world of intelligence work and the efforts by some regimes just to repress by whatever illegitimate or so-called sometimes social legally sanctioned. Measures that they can take. I'm sure there was as we saw in Saudi Arabia, there was a legal process by which some people, some unfortunate individuals who were doing pretty dirty jobs anyway, were actually charged in the case of Khashoggi. But the man ultimately responsible in that dark world of political decision making to suppress the truth and kill journalists along the way was the crown prince of that kingdom. Yeah. Who will eventually become formally the king, and with whom it has now been decided by our current administration that we have to cooperate for some greater purpose, clouded in that broad word stability. We have to be friends with him, or at least to collaborate with him in this business of establishing strategic partnerships, as Biden called them. And that's the ugly world we're now living in.
And it's so far along. It's so for us to get out of that world is almost impossible. But, you know, you look right now, David, and you look at the unrest that's going on in Europe with Great Britain. You look at Sri Lanka, what's happening there. You look at Ukraine. You look at Russia. You look all over the world. This is a very, very critical time in the history of this world, and in a time when the world is meant to be smaller because we have such great communication abilities between cell phones and it seems like the communication is worse now, and the understanding of other countries, country to country, is worse now than it was before our great technological revolution, which has made the Earth a smaller place to live in.
The technical revolution has given us an enormous volume of information. It's like standing in front of a fire hose bringing the news to you, working out what we can get out of that flow, that fast, oppressive flow almost of this gushing flow of so much information. Has become all the more difficult because of its volume. And because of exactly what you describe, it's all the more important to have journalism which is accurate and journalists have the ability to go about freely to conduct a job of checking and double-checking facts and not be at risk of losing their lives in the process. That conflict I was alluding to earlier between politics and governance on the one hand and journalism on the other is always going to be with us, but the journalist's job is to continue trying to get the truth. And even if, and I think sometimes it will inevitably involve journalists dying, But we have to be on the side. Well, I believe anyway, we have to be on the side of the journalists in this question. Getting the truth is more important than forming strategic alliances for so-called stability.
Absolutely, David. It's always great to speak to you, and I will speak to you next week.
I look forward to that.
David Terechuk with the Media Beat, not from New York City, but from the great state of Maine this morning. You can find David's reports online at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, click on the Media Beat with David Terechuk, or you can find his reports on his own website, which is themediabeat.us.